Hello and welcome to another episode of Two Guys and a Chainsaw. I'm Todd.
And I'm Craig.
Craig, I cannot believe that we are finally getting around to the Evil Dead franchise.
It is ridiculous. Like, we both, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I can speak for us both when I say we love these movies.
Oh my God, I know them all by heart.
I know!
How has it been 8+ years that we have managed to do it? I could have sworn that we had done the original and the Evil Dead movie from 2013. And you were like, no, we haven't, Todd. And sure enough, I looked it up and couldn't find it anywhere. We did do a minisode,
right?
Early on in our patron stuff, right?
Yeah, where we kind of glossed over the whole shebang. Like, that's so weird. I started listening to it last night because I know we've talked about it. So I started listening to it last night. But yeah, I can't believe it either. It's crazy. I honestly feel a little guilty. I'm sorry, Raimi. I'm sorry, Mr. Campbell. I love you.
It's crazy because these are, I mean, I'm sure you share the same feeling, but these are very important movies to me.
Yeah.
The original was a big, big, big influence in making me even want to try my hand at filmmaking. The second one, Army of Darkness, was huge. When we were in high school, my friends and I would quote Army of Darkness lines to each other all the time. I must have seen each of those three films. I don't know. I can't even count how many times I've seen them. I love them to death, and I show them to anyone who's never seen them before. And then I saw Evil Dead, the 2013 version. I think you had said, you know, you should check it out. It's pretty good. And I did, and I remembered liking that. It was gory and over the top and pretty ridiculous.
It's fine.
Fede Alvarez directs it.
Yeah, it's a fine movie. The only thing that I didn't like about it is it doesn't have the humor,
yes,
of the, like, it's really dark and it's really gory, and as a standalone film, like, if nobody had ever seen the other Evil Deads and they wanted to see a scary movie, it's a good scary movie. It is. It's scary and the effects are great. It was a little lacking to me because it didn't hit the humor at all, because the first one, God, we don't have to rehash all of this, but
we should just go and do them.
The first one that I saw was part two, and that's the reason why that one's my favorite one. It's gross, and the deadites are, like, scary, but they're also funny. It's a really funny movie, and I like that element of it. And, you know, Bruce Campbell is the heart, really, of this franchise, or has been. You know, he's involved in this, but he's not really in it. I mean, technically he is in it, but you don't see his face, but, like, he produced it and everything. And he is a super funny guy.
Yeah.
And so I like that little bit of humor. The movie that we're doing today is Evil Dead Rise, the most recent film adaptation. In fact, I think this came after the series, too, right?
Yeah, it did.
This is brand new.
It is.
This came out just last year, right?
Yeah, it's pretty new. In fact, I didn't realize it was already out, to be honest with you. That's how behind I am on things. I remembered hearing about it. I remembered seeing posters for it. I remembered thinking, oh, when that comes out, I'm going to have to check it out. And here we are a year, almost a year later. And I think it came out in April of last year.
It was originally intended to just be a streaming release for HBO Max, but it tested so well that it got a theatrical release. And I'm glad, and I've got so many things in my head that I want to say. What I was going to say was, I feel like this one does a good job of balancing the modern expectations for horror and gore, but there is still that little bit of humor in it too. And there are so many callbacks
to
the other movies, but much like the other movies, I would say that this one, if you had never seen another Evil Dead movie, you could watch this and it would be fine. You don't need to know what happened in the other ones.
Right, yeah. The first three in the series, they each take place right after the events of the previous one. You know, Evil Dead 1 ends, and then the sequel basically picks up right at the end of that. Then the third one, Army of Darkness, is what happens when Bruce Campbell's transported at the end of Evil Dead 2.
Well, and in 2 and Army of Darkness, the very beginning opens with a recap, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can jump on this train on any car.
That's true. Yeah, you really can. And I think a lot of people jumped in on Army of Darkness, at least in my generation. I think a lot of people ended up seeing Army of Darkness first or the second one, like you said, because Evil Dead, the first one came out like in the late 70s. And that was the one. That was Sam Raimi. This was basically almost high school kids.
Yeah.
These guys were super young, fresh out of high school. They had been making Super 8 movies. They were very big, like Three Stooges type fans. And they loved to do these sort of comedy movies. And that's really why the series has comedy at its core. And that's why I think it's really important tonally for at least to have some of it in there.
Right.
It's got to have a little bit of slapstick. It's got to have a little bit of hearty har. And this movie has it, whereas the one from 10 years ago, and I can't believe it's taken 10 years to see another theatrically released Evil Dead movie. Yeah, the one from 10 years ago, you're right. It was very solid, very disturbing horror. And without the comedy effect, it just didn't have the same tone that you expect from an Evil Dead movie.
Right. I mean, I still liked it. Like,
yeah, it was good.
It was still fine. A good movie. I just missed that stuff. But and this one does not lean into the comedy hard. It doesn't.
No. It's closer to the first one in a way.
It's here and there. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of winks and nods to fans of the franchise. Like repeated lines and similar scenarios and things like that.
So many. So
I know so many that there's no way that we'll remember to talk about them all. I liked that. But the other thing that I like about this one is that kind of even more so than the 2013 one, this one doesn't pull any punches.
No.
And it's pretty dark. Like, I went into this, you know, there's a cold open, which we should talk about because it's good. But ultimately, this is a movie about a single mother and her three children. And you think, well, wait, they're going to all be okay, right? No, they're not.
There aren't too many people to kill if they were all going to be okay anyway.
It surprised me. This, I don't know, like, I guess in the first movie, everybody's likable. You don't want anybody to die. They're just a bunch of innocent kids, but they're like 20-something kids. These are like kids.
Yeah, real kid.
Yeah, but anyway, I don't know where you want to start. I don't know if you want to jump right into that cold open or...
I think the cold open's kind of nice because it starts us off where we're so used to the Evil Dead being out in the woods at a cabin, and a very modern looking cabin at that. It's a giant A-frame that I guess was just a facade for the production, but giant A-frame with the woods almost bending around it the way that the camera lens is. It's so cool.
Well, yeah. The immediate open, though, is that classic POV.
Like, oh, yeah.
That is consistent through all of them, where it's just like some... Well, I don't know how they do it now, but I know that when the Raimis started, like in part one and two, they strapped the camera to a 2x4, and then two guys stood on either side of the 2x4, and they just ran through the through the forest.
In the woods.
And that's what it looks like, and, you know, there's... The sound of a fly buzzing, which I guess is, you know, consistent throughout the series also. But I also like that this one tricks you because this is a drone. It comes in on this young, good looking couple on a dock, like you said, cabin in the woods. But, you know, we don't know these people.
Yep.
But it's I just like that it's so immediate. Like, it tells you in the first 3 minutes that this is an Evil Dead movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's got all those little elements, all those little classic elements, and then the kind of ha-ha, wink-wink that it's a drone, you know, mm-hmm. which is really funny. And it's just three people. It's Teresa, Jessica, and Jessica's boyfriend, Caleb. I think it's Caleb is piloting the drone, and Teresa is standing outside there, and the drone almost hits her, and she makes a comment about how, you got to be careful, you know, that almost hit me in the face. And he's like, ah, it's okay. It's not like it would have taken your head off. You know, it just would have scratched your face up real bad. And then Teresa goes inside to see what Jessica is up to.
Because she's not well.
Mm-hmm.
She's checking on her because she's not well.
And I was thinking, are they really going to start this off that quickly? And sure enough, you know, she's on her back, on her side in the bed. We can't see her face. And Teresa is reading Wuthering Heights. Now, who in the world is going to be reading Wuthering Heights on vacation?
Hands up, this guy.
It's a very nerdy girl.
I read Wuthering Heights in a boat on a lake in Minnesota.
Are you
and
serious?
I'm not making that shit up.
Wow. Well, cool. So anyway, just like Craig, this girl's also reading Wuthering Heights on her vacation. And it does another callback to the first movie, where suddenly, as she's reading the text, Jessica, who can't see it at all, she's facing the complete opposite direction and seems to be asleep, suddenly starts reciting the text on the page, which is very similar to in the first Evil Dead when they were playing this little game where they were flipping cards.
And guessing or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the first reveal of the Deadite in that one, too. So anyway, long story short, she sits up on bed, she kind of rolls over on the table and over onto the floor, and then Teresa comes by real quick. It's like, are you okay? Are you okay? And she starts vomiting stuff, and she just basically goes full on Deadite and ends up taking them both out, but then also runs out, because this is the fun thing I like about the Deadites, too, is like, they're not zombies. They're the evil dead. They're like dead spirits, nebulous dead spirits that are brought back to life somehow that just possess people and then just fuck with everyone around them.
I love it.
Including the bodies that they're in.
Right.
Because they don't care. They just like to torment people. And I just love it. Mm-hmm. And I love the way they look. They have a very specific look. It's great. And she's got it all. She runs out down to the dock, scares the crap out of Jacob, grabs the drone, and she's holding it. And it's going. And again, in a nod to something that Jessica had said, that Teresa had said earlier, smashes it up against her face. And I went, oh, my God. Jumps into the lake, but she's not dead.
No, he jumps in after her. The boyfriend jumps in after her to, like, try to save her or whatever. But it's like Jaws attacks him. Like, he gets pulled down under and the whole water around him turns red. Meanwhile, oh, my God, she scalped her cousin by ripping her ponytail off. And so the bloody scalped cousin is on the dock and the Deadite girl rises up out of the water. And I don't even remember what the score was like, but it was like just a swelling.
And the title comes up around her.
Yes, it rises up. The title, Evil Dead Rise, rises up behind her. And you can also see it reflected in the water. Ugh, I thought it was fantastic.
And I can't believe we talked so much about just this little opening scene. But
I
to
know.
Me, this just encapsulated this setup, the fact that I knew I was going to like this movie.
Good.
I was like, they got it all right. And I was like, I have very high hopes for this. And I was not disappointed.
No, it's fantastic. And then it cuts to black and it tells us one day earlier. Which is kind of cool. It's kind of cool because you know that this is all going to take place over the course of one day. And
yeah,
loved it. But anyway, we meet, I guess, our protagonist, Beth, who is a guitar technician who works for a band, but she pees on a stick and finds out she's pregnant. So she goes to her sister Ellie's high-rise apartment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the pun of the title, Evil Dead Rise, because it takes place in a high rise, right? Which is cool. Like, I was excited when I heard that they were going to take it out of the woods. I mean, they did for Army of Darkness, but that was a whole different.
Medieval. Might as well be the woods.
Right. So when I was like, oh, they're going to put it in an urban, like, sky rise, I thought that was really clever. Ultimately, they don't really do very much with it.
Well, ultimately, the apartment becomes another isolated cabin in every which way. You know, ultimately, they can't get down. Nobody can get up to them. Their cell phones don't work. They are effectively as isolated in this high rise as everyone is in the cabin in the woods. So, you know, it's kind of cool how they did that. And then they were able to do interesting things with it, right?
I'm not complaining. I love this movie. I think that the reason that I didn't realize that it was so new is because I've already watched it 3 times. So I'm not complaining. I just kind of thought when I heard that it was going to be set in a high rise, I had like Gremlins 2 or I don't know. I just thought
something bigger in scope, right?
But yeah, like, oh, this is a great playground for the Evil Dead. Like, they can be, but whatever. Like, you're right. It's still claustrophobic and confined because Ellie is a single mother. Her sister doesn't know that because her sister has been not, like, listening to her messages or something. They have a strained relationship, whatever. But Ellie, who's played by Alyssa Sullivan, I want to make sure I mention her name because I think she's fantastic in this movie.
Alyssa Sutherland, yes.
Oh,
It's so funny. I have seen her now 3 times just in the last 2 days.
Really?
I've turned on this this old TV series called The Vikings because my girlfriend's been playing this Viking game, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, a lot. And so then we kind of gotten on this Viking kick and we flipped this on and she stars in that series. I think it's about 10 years old, that series, but it's got Gabriel Byrne in it and about 8 years old, I think. It's kind of interesting. And then we also recently started watching The Mist TV series and she's in that too. So then she popped up in here and I was like, God, why is she showing up all of a sudden in everything I see? But she's got a real striking look.
She's striking. That's exactly what I was going to say. Striking.
Oh, it works so well for the Deadite. Like, mm-hmm. It's so good.
Oh. Spoiler alert. Oh.
Right. Okay, so she's got these three kids. The oldest is Danny, and he's, 17? I would guess.
Yeah, maybe 16, 17. Yeah.
Younger sister Bridget, who seems like maybe just a year younger. She's a teenager too. And then Cassie is the little girl, and she's little. She is so good in this too because she's like a figurine. You know, she's like a precious doll. Moments figurine. She's blonde haired and blue eyed. And
isn't she even in a dress?
I think she's in a dress or like a nightgown or something. I mean, she gives me major Carol Ann in Poltergeist 1 vibes, precious blonde girl that like must be protected at all costs. Somebody should get her out of this movie.
Right.
I don't want her to see the things that she's about to see.
Right.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay, so I took so many notes. I don't know why I took so many notes because it's actually really simple. They seem like a great family. They all have each other, you know, like they mess around with each other and they're fun. And the little girl has a broomstick with a weird doll's head on the end. And its name is Staphanie. And the reason that she has it is because her older brother told her that the building used to be a bank and somebody greedy died there. And if they hear you walking around with change in your pockets, they'll scare you to death so they can steal your money. So she has Staphanie. So if that ghost ever confronts her, she can scare it to death with Staphanie before it can scare her to death.
I've just got to say that I feel like Staphanie is just a little too clever for this 8-year-old to have made up herself. But
I don't know. Like, I thought it was so weird, but
so out of left field.
I don't know. Kids come up with crazy stuff, but
that's true.
It was funny. But we do get that backstory that this used to be a bank. So when the two sisters have to start having like serious talks because Ellie has to explain to Beth that her husband left and now like the building is condemned and they're getting kicked out and they have nowhere to go. Like, it's trouble all around.
And Beth has to explain to her that she's pregnant.
Right. So they send the kids away to get pizza and they have those kind of serious conversations. And it's obvious that they love each other. It's obvious that they've been through a lot, but you know, there's also distance, as happens with adult people, you know, like,
yeah, even when you're family, you just, well, you're very close to your family, actually. Yeah. You see them an awful lot.
And
my family is, gosh, you know, I can go for months, if not years sometimes, and not say a word to my sisters, and I love them to death.
Right.
We all get along great, and we're all wonderful. It's just that's how it is, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I get it. I live in the same town as my parents, and so I usually see them at least once a week. And I think it's weird if I don't hear from my sister at least every other day.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah. Still, I'm not the one that's good about it. Like, she reaches out to me. She texts me and calls me all the time. I called her the other day, and I was like, I haven't heard from you in like 3 days. And she's like, well, I've texted you a bunch, and you never respond. Sorry.
Well, it's kind of the same here with Beth, too, because Beth is not up to date on this whole situation with the husband leaving because she didn't respond or even really notice or receive the two texts.
Voicemails.
That Ellie had sent her. Yeah, voicemails. That's right. Well, who listens to voicemail anymore anyway?
I know.
Do you? I don't
know.
If I have voicemail, I wouldn't even know. I don't listen to those things. But she's like she keeps calling her a groupie because she's a guitar technician, but she kind of disparages her about that. Like, you're not. You're just a groupie running around with these these bands. There's a little bit of tension there.
A little bit. I mean, a little bit of judgment,
I suppose. I don't know. She kind of feels like maybe Beth is on the wrong track with her life or something.
They're sisters. Like, you can, sibling relationships are complicated, right? Like, I mean, they're as complicated, I would say, as like romantic partnerships. Like, you know each other so well.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Thus ends the Dr. Phil portion of our show for the day. That's right. But anyway, they send
We're not taking any more calls, guys.
They send the kids off to get pizza, and they have their serious conversation. And just as the kids get back, there's an earthquake, and the kids are in the garage, and the ground opens up, and they drop the pizza, whatever. And Danny goes and looks down where the ground is open up, and he's like, hey, it looks like an old bank vault. And it is.
And like an idiot.
Like an idiot. and at so his bad. Sister, you know, his sister protests. He goes down in there. Like, bro, there are likely going to be aftershocks. Do you really want to be like under? Anyway, but he has to get down there because it is an old bank vault. And
it's more than that.
Yeah. It also, there's a giant crucifix that like groans as it falls over on him. And there are crosses and like Saint Benedict medals, like protection medals, like hanging all around.
A giant like sarcophagus shaped thing in the middle. Like, what kind of bank was this?
Evil one. Or a good one, I guess, because it had all those, but it was protecting. Like, this is such one of those things in horror movies. You're like, get out of there. Like, if I ever walk in a room that is protected by a huge crucifix and tons of hanging, I am turning around.
Yeah.
I am not investigating. This is not a place that I need to be.
Which just gets followed by a series of dumb choices that are very typical in horror movies to the point of parody, where they just continue to do stupid things they shouldn't do with mysterious artifacts that are creepy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He finds a bunch of shit. Like, he finds a photograph of some, like, priests, like, shaking hands or something, and some documents that he doesn't really look at, but he finds a couple of vinyl albums. He's a DJ, we didn't mention. So he's interested in these vinyl albums, which I get that. Yeah, if he's a DJ and these are albums from like God knows when, sure, I get it.
The 20s, I'm sure he's really going to make a great house mix with those 1920s phonograph records. At least he has the material to play it. Who else would have a record player in there? Yeah.
right. Apartment. Okay. And then in that sarcophagus, in which there also appears to be a body that, and that doesn't seem to bother him, he reaches in and he pulls out what's clearly a book, like wrapped in like linen, and it appears to be moving under the linen. So he opens it up and all these bugs fly in his face.
Ugh.
So many red flags.
Right.
stop. Think about what is happening to you.
Have you not seen the Evil Dead series?
But they go back upstairs. There's a little incidental stuff where the mom is like talking to the neighbors because she is worried about the kids. And I don't know, she can't get downstairs or something.
A neighbor brings up the cat walking around in the air vents for purposes we know immediately that's going to come in later.
Obviously. I was hoping we would get to see a deadite cat.
I know.
Very
disappointed.
Me too. But then the kids get back up there and they're, you know, it's everything's fine, whatever. The mom has to go do laundry and Danny starts playing those records. They won't play at either of the speeds that the record player will play them at either of the RPMs. And so he has to like physically spin it with his finger. But when he does that, then it starts playing through the speaker system. And the first one he plays, that's like a conference, right?
I would like to present what I believe to be one of the three fabled volumes of Naturum de Monta, the Book of the Dead. My tests to date have revealed that its bindings are made of pure human flesh. Its passages and etchings inked in blood.
This is heresy!
And I seek church approval to translate the spiritual mysteries its pages undoubtedly hold.
Destroy it! It's called the Book of the Dead for a reason!
Called the Book of the Dead for a reason.
That was Bruce Campbell. That line that you just said, that was Bruce Campbell. That's his only appearance in this movie, as far as I know. Right. Destroy it. Destroy it.
And by the way, I was grinning from ear to ear because this is the series is like hallmark, right?
Oh, it's fantastic.
There's always the evil book. And then it always is a recording of somebody, I've just discovered this book. It appears to be the Book of the Dead. Now, let me read out loud and record from the passages in the first page. I was so happy to see this.
Yeah, and it was a really clever way of doing it because, like, in the original two, at least, it's like a reel-to-reel recording.
Yeah.
So when it starts up, it starts all that slow, like, and then it comes, and they recreate that here with the vinyl. It's really clever. And then he starts playing the second one, and the priest is like, even though they said I shouldn't do anything with it, I'm going to anyway. So now I'm going to read from it.
From an incantation that appears to be able to summon demonic entities. Like, he literally says that out loud. He knows what he's reading before he reads it.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And he starts to read it, and strange things start happening, and Danny tries to stop. Like, he takes his finger off it, but it keeps playing, and he tries to turn off the record player, but it just keeps going. And, like, the pages of the I guess the wind is blowing in the apartment and the pages of the book are flapping. Meanwhile, his mother is getting into the elevator with her laundry. And all of a sudden, as this incantation is going on, we see the Evil Dead POV. I don't know what else to call it. It's like the spirit POV or whatever. And it's racing and it ends up slamming into her, slamming her back into the elevator. So that we can have the Evil Dead tree rape scene.
Yeah.
Even though there's no raping in this one, which I'm glad.
No, I'm okay with it. I was waiting for it. I'm okay. It's not there.
But it is a great homage to.
Oh, yeah.
That happens in at least the first two, something like. Yeah.
It's one of the most shocking and out of left field scenes in the first movie.
Yes.
Because it just happens and then it's done and you're like, did I just see what I thought I saw?
Uh-huh.
And then it's never spoken of, you know? And then the other ones, I think people similarly get twisted up with vines and stuff, mm-hmm. like in the woods and whatnot, but they're not the one shooting between the legs like in that mm-hmm. first one. But it's a great homage, like you said. It more than anything, it seems to just like twist her limbs in all directions and maybe even break them.
It's like with cords. I'm not.
Yeah. Like, it's like hanging electrical bits from the elevator because it's kind of broken because whatever.
But it contorts her all. I mean, it's beautifully shot. I mean, it's so well. It's an amazing scene, and it contorts her. Her limbs are and her neck are all bound by these wires, like thick cords, and it's just moving her around like a marionette in very like seemingly torturous positions. It just beats the shit out of her for a while.
Yeah.
Even before it pulls her up. Like,
it's like an invisible force.
Like a ghost is like punching her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's all beat up. She goes through this terrible ordeal. It's very violent. I didn't notice. I should have. I don't know why I didn't, but her arms are all tattooed with vines. That's also an homage to this.
I didn't notice that.
And that's before she was even attacked. Like, that's just part of her character. So then she goes back home, but she's a deadite now. She walks with a very strange posture, I assume because she's at least partially broken. But eventually she's also, I mean, she's like an evil demon. She's a deadite. I know, the listeners, I know you know what I'm talking about. It's a distinctive look. It's not like a zombie. It's more like a supernatural demon or something just kind of inhabiting a human body. So it can do unnatural things.
Mm-hmm.
It can move in unnatural ways and
flow. And yeah,
right,
smile extremely wide and all kinds of crazy stuff.
That's why I wanted to mention that actress, because she is fantastic. Like, she was very sympathetic as a character before. Like, she's this tough single mother who is really fighting for her family. They live in kind of a slummy, condemned building. These are people who are struggling, but they are a tight family. and very easy to root for. And so she's already sympathetic. And now, for the rest of the movie, she is this deadite, and she plays it so well.
She has a lot to do for the rest of the movie.
A lot. A lot.
She's kind of ultimately the main force against them. I mean, there are going to be other deadites, but like she's constantly there and she's the ever-present threat and, you know, up to the very end.
She's terrifying.
It is terrifying. She just walks in, stumbles in. And you know what? As a kid and seeing your mother just off, you know, even seeing your mom sick, you know, that's a little scary.
I know.
So to see her just suddenly come in and she just more or less, like you said, stumbles into the kitchen in this unnatural walk, slowly starts cracking eggs just by throwing them in a pan like she's making them breakfast, muttering and mumbling. And I think the idea here is that she's still a little bit there.
I guess like the real her has one last gasp.
It's in me. Take my babies.
God, like,
ugh.
You watched this just for the first time for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking at this point?
Oh my God.
I was thinking, there's no way they're going to kill these kids. There's just no way. There's just no way.
I thought there's no way they're going to kill the youngest kid. I feel like teenagers are always fair game in a horror movie. Even these cute ones, you know, that seem really nice and sweet.
I guess, but usually, not always, but usually...
They're the heroes.
Well, there's like, they get killed, but... There's something they shouldn't have been doing, you know? Like,
yeah, right.
And in this one, I guess you could justify the brother. Like, the sister, the middle sister, when he opened the book, which was also a cool scene, the book has, like, teeth in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And when he tries to open it, he cuts himself, and it bleeds on the cover, and the blood seeps in. Of course, they don't see any of this. But then the book opens, and they look at it, and it's typical Necronomicon stuff. But the sister's like, I don't like it. Get rid of it. He says, well, Mom is not going to let us leave the apartment tonight because of the earthquake.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, but get rid of it first thing. And then he still plays the records or whatever. I guess you could say if he were to get killed, he brought it on himself. But nobody else did.
But that's how this works. Even in
the
original,
it's the Evil Dead. The Evil Dead don't care. Like,
that's what sets the series apart, really. It doesn't follow that convention, now that I completely think about it, where it doesn't set up these bad teenagers who are even doing things like, oh my God, having sex or doing drugs.
Right.
Not that bad, but anyway, it gives them some kind of moral reason to go. I don't think the series follows that rule at all. It just doesn't care. Like, the Evil Dead, they get everybody.
Well, yeah, and the television series doesn't either. Like, they'll kill whoever, kid, deadites, whatever. Like, they don't care either.
Danny lives with tremendous guilt after this, that he was the one who might have caused this. Or he's pretty convinced he's the one who caused it, and he is.
And he is. I mean, he didn't mean to do it, but... Seriously, like, don't mess with evil relics. It's never
Look,
a good...
The warning signs were there.
Yeah, right?
Come on.
Okay, all right.
So anyway, now a couple of the neighbors come over to help because they just think she's dead, but she looks very strange, and they comment on that, and they lay her in the bed, and there's a bunch of little creepiness where, you know, they try to close her eyes, and then her eyes spring back open again. There's even a call out to the first movie where there's a close up on her eyes and then they look left. You know, she's supposed to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
But then she kind of wakes up. So there are these neighbors. One guy is from across the street, across the hall. And the other dude is kind of an older man with a beard and a gun, kind of a good old boy type guy. But
it doesn't really matter. They just need to establish that there are other people there.
They're like the only other people in this entire building. It's kind of insane.
Well, it's being condemned, and she only has like a week to get out. So I assume that everybody else has just already left.
Yeah.
Or most everybody. There's a comment
about that, isn't there?
But yeah, you're right. Like, before, when Beth still thinks Ellie is dead, she's like talking to her and she's like, you were always the one that fixed things. And then Ellie starts talking to her through Beth's phone.
Yeah.
Like, it starts out the messages that she had left, but then it's like, Beth, help me, I'm burning alive. And then she wakes up and she's alive again, and she's like, her temperature, like, she's burning up. So they put her in the tub when I say they, I mean Beth and the children, put her in the tub, and she convulses and then jumps up to the ceiling where she suspends herself from the ceiling and stares at Bridget and screams so loud that the kids and Beth have to cover their ears and everybody else in the building can hear it.
Yeah, breaks glass and all that stuff.
Right. And then she just stops and falls back into the tub. And then she like comes, her face comes up like just a little bit over the tub, like looking at them.
Mom, Mommy's with the maggots now.
I think they used that in the trailer. This just like, it's scary for what it is. The Deadites, I think, are very scary because
yeah,
they're sadistic and they take pleasure in tormenting people and torturing them. And that's creepy. But it's tenfold creepy that Cassie is maybe what, like seven? Maybe not even, maybe like five?
She could be six or seven easily, yeah. She's about my son's age.
She's this tiny little child, and she's seeing, this is her mother.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it is an absolute nightmare. The mom crawls towards them and stabs Beth through the hand, and
oh my God. That was painful.
Yeah, well, I'll allow
it. Not the most painful.
I'll allow it because it's an Evil Dead movie, but like it's just one of those things. Like she gets totally stabbed through the hand and then she just wraps it up in some tape.
And she's fine. Right. She can even kind of use it. Yeah. For the rest of the show.
Fine. And the mom, this goes on for a long time. Like the mom just kind of torments them. Like
she jumps on Bridget.
She talks to Bridget in her, like the actual mom voice. And Bridget says, what's happened to you? And she says, I'm free now, free from all you titty sucking parasites. And then attacks her.
There's a drill. What is that?
I think it was a tattoo needle.
Oh, okay. I thought, why did they have like dental equipment in here?
Maybe Ellie is a tattoo artist.
Oh, I mean, that would make sense. You're right. Somebody is. Yeah, you're right. She basically ends up nicking her on the cheek before a neighbor walks in at the most inopportune time. So she takes her attention off of Bridget and lunges onto the neighbor out of the hallway and then takes what looks like a giant bite out of his face. And when she pulls away, you can see that she has bitten his eye out.
Yeah.
I have never seen that in a movie until now. I just have to feel like they were sitting around just writing like, all right, guys, what just hasn't been done yet? Because we're just going to put it all in this movie.
But then, she like chokes on it and coughs it up and it flies into somebody else's mouth.
Yeah, which is exactly like what happens in the second movie when they're squeezing the giant demon and it flies. Except in that movie, when the eyeball pops out of the demon's mouth and flies into one of the gal's mouths in there, I think that causes her to be possessed too. And it didn't seem to have that effect this time.
Well, it flies into one of the neighbor's mouths. I don't know if that's what causes, because so they take, the family takes advantage of this situation and locks the mom out.
Yes.
And so the mom is out there and we see through the, what's that called?
The peephole.
The peephole.
Oh.
You see through the peephole. It's like the mom just slaughters everybody else in the hallway.
It's like watching TV. All they can do is watch through the peephole as mom is putting on this performance of slaughter in front of them. It's funny, actually. And it also, it's, you know, there's so much of Raimi's style in this movie.
Yes.
With the quick zooming in and the quick dolly shots and the interesting angles. And this is classic Raimi through that peephole that's all distorted. And, oh, it's so good.
It is great. And like, you see some of it and you don't see some of it because you only have the perspective of the peephole. And at one point, the mom is standing in front of the peephole and you hear a gunshot and she flies out of frame. Somebody, the big guy, the guy that you mentioned before, the white haired guy, shot her with a rifle. But she's not dead and she jumps up and she kills him too. So now the hallway is littered with like three bodies and the mom is locked in the hall and she keeps trying to get back in. But Bridget blames Danny. She says it was the book. Beth's like, what are you talking about? And Danny's like, I have to show you something. So they go off together. And so that leaves Cassie and Bridget. And Cassie asks Bridget if she's okay because she's acting a little weird. And she goes into the kitchen. And I had kind of forgotten about this. But like, when you get injured in the world of the Evil Dead, like if they bite you or they scratch you, you can, you don't always, but you can become infected with evil.
It's an evil infection.
It is. And it, you know, Ash's hand gets demon infected, and so he has to chop it off before it spreads to the rest. And
so funny.
You know, that's how people sometimes turn into deadites. And while Danny is showing Beth the book and the records and stuff, Bridget is in the kitchen turning into a deadite, and it's super gross. And I felt bad. Like, one of the things that I liked about this movie so much was that these were really sympathetic characters. I cared about this whole family.
Mm.
They were decent, kind people.
They didn't deserve this.
They weren't asking for it.
Not one bit of premarital sex.
No, they weren't asking for it. They were just minding their own business at home, and the ground had to open up and reveal evil. It was a bummer. But man, that scene was gross though, right?
Oh God, it was so gross. I like too that they kept a little bit of the original Evil Dead with that kind of those black veiny cracks showing up around the yeah. face. I was like, you know, they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to slip in all of these actual, you know, they're doing a new movie. They can do whatever. But the attention to that level of detail was just great and such fan service. I loved it. Yeah, she turns at the same time that this is happening in there. Cassie is getting called by the mother in the mother's voice, because this is something else the deadites do.
Yeah.
They'll try to trick you by taking the voice of the victim, like,
what's wrong with you, Mom?
I was just feeling sad about me and your dad, but he's here now. He came home to see us. We're getting back together. We love each other. Isn't that right, my darling?
Now, if you were Cassie, I don't care how young you are, and you're looking through that peephole, and you're seeing your mom look like she does, I don't think I'd be able to look at her, let alone believe her to open the door.
Interesting choice there, too, because in the previous movies, the deadites have the ability to make themselves look like the person.
Yeah.
Like, not...
to flip right back.
Right, not grow.
Yeah, to turn off the evil look.
Right, right. And they don't do that here, which is fine. It's just as much as they do. And you say it's fan service. I do think it is. But I also can I can only imagine that Lee Cronin, the writer director of this movie, is a huge fan. And if you're a huge fan,
you try to keep it consistent. Yeah.
Well, you want to do it right. You know, you want to. I don't know. I also understand wanting to go in different directions and things like that. But I don't know. This feels like a love letter to the franchise.
Yeah, and I also read, because there's a lot of turmoil as far as, like, were they going to do a second Army of Darkness? Were they not? At one point they were, then that kind of ended up being the TV series, and then this movie, what, you know, there was going to be a sequel to the 2013 Evil Dead, and that didn't turn out, and so then there's this movie. The Raimi and Campbell and Robert Tapert, the producer, have all been involved in all these efforts from the very beginning. And I was kind of surprised to hear that Bruce Campbell fairly recently, I think, as recently as last year, said there are probably going to be more of these movies coming out, probably every 2 to 3 years. And Raimi and Tappert are working right now on a series Bible, writing down the established rules and all that stuff and the timelines and where this can go to guide people in the future. And I thought, I'm surprised they haven't done that already. But it's cool, right? Like, they all care. They want to keep it consistent and not apparently go off in wild new. I guess the whole reason I'm talking about this is we've seen so many remakes and redos and reboots that just totally trash everything. They're trying to be original, you know, and trying to be clever, which a certain extent of that is okay, but you still want some consistency in at least the basic rules and the, I don't know, the visual language and stuff of what you love about so many movies that came before. They're going to do it, apparently. They're going to make sure.
And I think that Campbell's probably right. You know, these will keep happening.
This one was massively successful, so
yeah. I'm not surprised that they decided to put it in theaters because it tested well. I'm not surprised it tested well, especially for fans of the franchise. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. But, you know, what's her name? Bridget's transformation is disgusting. She, like, blood, like, black, gross blood.
Oh, bleeds out of everything.
Come out of her eyes and her nose and her mouth and her ears. And then she vomits blood. And then the aunt finds...
God, how did they even do that, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because most of this movie was practical effects. They had very little CGI in this whole thing, which is kind of crazy.
And it looks fantastic. And she pukes up like maggots or something. And then the aunt finds her eating a wine glass. And she says something like, I got to kill the creepy crawlies that I got inside my tummy. And then she taunts Beth about her pregnancy. Beth hasn't told anybody she's pregnant.
No.
And then she attacks Beth, and they're like, I think one of the famous, most famous bits from this movie is the cheese grater.
Oh, God.
She takes a cheese grater to Beth's leg, and that I can't believe, I don't recall ever seeing that in a horror movie before, and I can't believe I haven't, because that is one of the most nightmarish things I can imagine.
Oh, oddly enough, right? I literally screamed out loud, not the cheese grater. To which Liz turned and looked at me and just busted out laughing. She's like, you actually said out loud, not the cheese
grater. Had she seen it before?
No, she hadn't.
Is she a fan of the franchise?
She is a fan. I don't know if she's seen all of them, but she's seen the first one. We watched the 2013 one together at one point. And so, yeah, but I think it's so weird. This is the goriest movie with so much gross and insane stuff happening. And I think that bothered me the most.
Oh, it's visceral, because you can imagine like that. Yeah, that's even more upsetting than right next.
Chainsaw in the
well,
head.
And yeah, Cassie, this small child. Now, it's not even intentional. It's inadvertent. Her sister attacks her, and she just holds up Staphanie impales Bridget through the head,
right through the mouth. Yeah,
right. She's dead, but when you're a deadite, you're not really dead. You're only dead for a while, but so she comes back later. But it's like little things, like the little girl says,
"Is this a nightmare?"
"It's just like a nightmare, Cass.
Is what happened to Bridget and Mom gonna happen to us?"
"I'm not going to let that happen. I promise."
"You'd be a good mom someday, honey, Beth."
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah. You know how to lie to kids."
Oh, my God. Like, what are you doing, Evil Dead movie? Stop it. I am not going to cry in this Evil Dead movie.
It's interesting, though, because that seems to like almost solidify Beth. It's almost like at this moment, at least how I interpreted it, Beth makes this decision that she wants this baby and that she's going to keep this baby. And now she needs to be a good mother and protect this baby. And, you know, this, I don't know, maybe it was just me, but that was like my feeling that that's how suddenly she snaps and she says, "I'm going to save us all."
She, Beth and Cassie, are Ripley and Newt.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She is going to protect this kid.
Right. So she decides she needs to listen to the third record to understand. She's like, look, if these things told you how to do it, maybe the third record is going to show us how to end this. And absolutely not. It's just listening to the priest recording himself despairing about how nothing kills these things, which is funny because in the first movie, or is it the second one? I can't remember. They talk about the only thing that will stop these guys is total bodily dismemberment.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, he says, even dismemberment doesn't work. Every little piece of them will come hunting you down. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
that was different. That was a little different, if I recall, right? I seem to remember. Oh, no, it's not true. I seem to remember beheading them killed them, but no, because no, in the first
their
movie,
their heads can stay alive and talk.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of comedy with headless bodies running around.
Well, and Ash's girlfriend's head in that vice talking to him and taunting him.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the mom gets the idea from the cat to go through the vents, and she gets in and gets in behind Beth while she's listening to the records. And the sister, who they've already killed and tied up in blankets, but she comes back to life and attacks. And she stabs the brother in the arm a couple times. So you know he's done for.
Right in the bicep.
I know.
Jesus.
Ugh. The mom attacks Beth, the sister, but while all of this fighting is going on, Cassie is hiding under the couch, and at one point she slides scissors to her aunt so that she can stab the mom up through the head with the scissors. There's a lot of up through the mouth stabbing.
There is. I guess because it's the most brutal. I thought Ellie for sure was going to rip the fetus out of, out of Beth. It was so close. She's on top of her and she's got her hand down there and she starts to dig her nails in.
And she says another great callback. There are several great callback lines, but she says, I'll swallow your soul. And then she goes down to her abdomen and she looks up at her and says, two souls. That's right. Great.
Oh, she ends up stabbing her. They end up out in the hallway, I believe.
Well, Danny dies. He apologizes to his little sister and he dies. And the aunt and Cassie end up in the hall.
There's the whole Dead by Dawn chant that, you know, all of the bodies in the hall start coming to life.
Right, right. And the mom comes out and they're trying to get the elevator working, and they do eventually, but the mom comes out. Beth shoots off her leg and her arm, but then all of the other dead bodies in the hallway turn into deadites, and one of them says, you'll all be dead by dawn, and then they start chanting dead by dawn, which that's classic.
Oh, yeah.
It's the title of the second movie, right?
Mm-hmm, and this literally happens in the second movie.
I love it. But then one of the things that I love about this movie, I don't remember if anything like this has ever happened before, but because the mother has lost an arm and a leg, both of her deadite kids and some of the other deadites like surround her and start like ripping into her body. And you kind of see an illustration of this in the book, the Necronomicon, or the Book of the Dead or whatever. And I don't remember. I feel like I kept referring to it as this in my notes because I feel like maybe it's from one of the other movies, The Abomination. Yeah, I think that's from the last movie. I think that the big bad at the end was called The Abomination. I don't know what to call this, but it's
The Thing.
The Thing. Yeah, it's like
it's like all three of the pressed together and a bunch of limbs all jutted out in different directions. It's like a giant spider of people.
It's gross and it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
As that's assembling, they get into the elevator. All of a sudden, the electricity comes on. The electricity has been out this whole time, by the way. At least in the elevator, the electricity comes back on, but then it starts to fill with blood. And it does fill with blood to the point where they are swimming, wading in it. And that monster is in the elevator shaft on the top. So the blood is raising them up towards this thing. Like there's just all arms akimbo, like reaching through the top of it. But then it makes a point of showing the blood rising above the capacity sign. And you hear the elevator cords snap and it falls. And at the bottom, the doors burst open and blood, Beth and Cassie just spill out in a wave of blood on the floor.
It's like The Shining.
It is.
It's so cool. I was just thinking about this. You know, there's that whole thing where I've always wondered when I was a kid, like if you were in a falling elevator, if you just jump a little bit before the end of the ground, you're going to be safe. The answer is no. But I did wonder, okay, well, if you're in an elevator filled with liquid and it hits the ground, is the liquid enough to, if you're bobbing in the liquid, is that enough to cushion your fall?
I don't know. I think you would kind of flow out like they did.
Well, you would, but at least you didn't smack against the ground real hard, you know?
Right, right. I mean, it seems that they are at minimum in shock for a moment.
Yeah.
But the aunt wakes up first and then she wakes up the kid. And again, it's very much like that scene in Poltergeist where they get Carol Ann out and she's unconscious. And little kids, It seems like, have a hard time playing that. Like they're a little stiff.
Yeah.
It reminded me so much of that scene in Poltergeist. Anyway, then they get out, they get in the car, they've got the keys. It seems like they're kind of home free, but it takes a while for the gate to open. It does open, but it takes a while. And apparently in that time, the monster has come out and is holding the car back?
No, I think they get stuck in that hole in the ground. She drives the front tire right into that hole. So they have no hope of getting out of there with the car. And so as the monster's stalking them, they slip out of the car in this very tense scene where Yeah, they're kind of sneaking around the car and then sneaking around the back. I just don't think this deadite's trying very hard, which is typical for them. They'd rather torture you than anything else. Could have just jumped on the top of the car and come down hard on them. But no, they kind of, it's just a whole bunch of sneaking, right?
Yeah.
Where they get around and there's a giant, what looks like maybe a garbage truck or something, but it turns out it's like a wood chipper?
Yeah, for like grinding branches.
Metal?
No, I think you're right. I think there's also a chainsaw there. I think that we're meant to believe that this is like a maintenance thing, like a groundskeeping type thing.
Some kind of tree trimming service.
Something like that. And yeah, like they Indiana Jones it out under the gate, but the monster grabs Cassie and pulls her back just as the gate closes. So the aunt has to get back in, and she does, and the monster has
Cassie in that thing.
Yeah, inside there, and it's like, I just want your head, and it's got the chainsaw, and it's about to cut her head off.
Is this the moment at which she has the rifle that she had gotten from the neighbor?
She must.
This is her line, I think. She says, come get some, I think, and shoots the monster. Yeah, another great Bruce Campbell line.
And so then Cassie gets away. She's fighting it. The monster is dragging her into that mulcher. But Cassie turns it off, and somehow Beth is able to get the advantage, and she flips it around, and she gets the monster and into the mulcher and tells Cassie to turn it back on, and she does, and then Beth, like, chainsaws it back in there, and you see the brother and the sister, their heads are, it's like a three-headed monster, you see them.
Yeah.
Only Ellie talks, only the mom talks, but she's the last one, and she begs for help, and you know, in her real voice, and Beth chainsaws her head, and until the whole monster gets sucked in except for Ellie's head, and it talks to her.
You know, you really do look like Mom, and you're gonna fail miserably just like her.
And then punts her head into the grinder, and it's hilarious. And Beth and Cassie embrace, and they start to walk away, and then they pause, and Beth comes back and picks up the chainsaw, like, oh, we'll take this with us, just in case.
Smart move, by the
way. Hilarious.
Very smart. They did everything short of, you know, having her hand get chopped off and put the chainsaw on her.
Right, right.
It's a cool nod, like, you got to get that chainsaw in there.
Absolutely. And I love the throwback lines, too. And they work. They don't feel forced.
No.
And again, you could, if you'd never seen any of these other movies, I don't think that you would be like, where did that come from? Like,
oh, you'd enjoy it just as much. They're in jokes, but they're not in jokes that leave everybody else out.
Right.
They're good lines.
Then the camera pans to, like, the keychain. It's Ellie's keychain in their station wagon or whatever. And it's like a picture, like an amusement park picture of the family.
Oh.
I know. Sad. God, that poor child. But then it's the next morning, and a girl is coming down, and she's talking on the phone. She's like FaceTiming somebody, and she's like, yeah, I was up all night because of the storm, and there's been no electricity, so I didn't get any sleep, but we're still going to the lake. It's the girl from the beginning, and she's talking to her cousin, who we saw in the beginning, and she hangs up the phone, and she gets in her car, but then I guess she notices something strange, and so she walks towards the grinder, and she sees all the blood and carnage, and she's scared and screams, and then the evil gets her.
The evil drone shot.
The end.
What a great movie.
I loved it.
I did too. Dark slapstick humor in here. Even darker, really, than the previous ones, but it's all still there. Tonally, it really worked as an Evil Dead movie. I loved all the nods without it being overbearing and stupid. Sam Raimi's fingerprints felt all over. It was a total homage to his filmmaking style. I just thought it was great. Bruce Campbell's not in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, he wasn't in the previous one, but it took place at the cabin since they had been there,
right,
apparently. This is just totally kind of fresh. I like that.
I do too. I think that it opens up a world of possibilities.
Yes.
This can just happen anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's established that there are three books, but whatever, those books can end up anywhere. Who cares? Anybody can find it. I'm into it. And I do hope that they continue in some way. You know, Bruce Campbell has said that he's done with Ash, not with the franchise. He's invested in the franchise. that he's done playing Ash. He said that before, too.
Yeah, before the series, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I'd love to see him back if he wants to, but, you know, he is getting older, and it's fine if, you know, they just keep moving on in different directions. But I love the Deadites as horror villains.
Oh, they're fantastic.
They're unique. They're scary. They're funny.
Funny and scary at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Sadistic. Really dark
sadistic
humor. Yeah.
Right.
It's so good.
Right. I love it. So I hope that it can, you know, in some way continues on. But this one's good. I've been talking to you about it for a while. I'm glad that we finally got around to it. I can't believe, listen, you know, we're going to have to go back and actually talk about some of these other movies.
Oh, we're going to do them all. There's no way. I'm not going to skip over a single one. I freaking love this franchise.
I know. They're all so good.
I could record an episode on the first three right now. I don't even have to watch it. I've seen it so many times. It's memorized. We did, didn't we?
We did, but we went through it so quickly, and there's so much to talk about. That's another thing that's really cool about this franchise is, like you said, these guys, they started out with nothing. You know, they made the first one on a shoestring budget. And
yeah,
because of the success of that, they went on to become really incredibly successful filmmakers in their own right. But they never forgot their roots, and mm-hmm, they have all stayed friends and continued to work together. And it's just, there's so many cool behind-the-scenes things to talk about.
Yeah.
We've got to do it at some point.
And they just seem like really good guys. Like,
yeah, cool guys.
Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, the stories I've heard. I knew a person who worked with him on one of the Spider-Man movies, and you just, I'd love to be friends with those people.
I have a feeling that under different circumstances, we would. They're the kind of guys that we would be friends with.
Yeah, because we're cool. Look at us. Well, thank you again for listening to another episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. Let us know online on either our website or our social media channels which Evil Dead movie you think we should tackle next. Should we go straight for the first one? Should we do the newer one first? Should we jump to Army of Darkness, which is a favorite of a lot of people? Let us know anywhere there. Also, leave us a review. That's one of the best things you can do to help us spread the word about our podcast, just on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. Also, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/chainsawpodcast. And if you had been a patron a couple years ago, we did an episode where we went through the entire franchise for our patrons. So there's a lot of cool stuff we do for our patrons that you guys never see. You can get in on that by just going there with a very, very low price of $5 a month. Support the podcast. Until next time, I'm Todd.
And I'm Craig.
With two guys and a chainsaw.